Well, now, little one, this is your Uncle Jazbo with another bedtime story, The Three Little Pigs. Once upon a time in the land of Ooh Papa Dow, there lived three little pigs. One of them was very cool, another was more on the commercial side, and the third was definitely square. One day, as the three little pigs were taking five, they heard that a big bad wolf was making the local scene on a one-nighter. Knowing that his approach signaled danger, they immediately set about the business of constructing shelter. The square little pig swung a quick GI loan, and in cut time threw up a real frantic bungalow, complete with wall-to-wall floors and a TV antenna. The commercial little pig laid out for a few bars, and then moved into a prefab joint out of the high-rent district. But the cool little pig goofed altogether, and at the last possible minute built himself a real purple light shack out of clarinet reeds and scotch tape. Well, sir, the big bad wolf blew in as advertised, and the first place he went looking for action was to the shack of the third little pig. And applying his hairy knuckles to the door, he laid down a crazy paradiddle and said, "Man, it's a raid." "Jack," said the pig, "it's after closing." "Don't hand me that jazz," the wolf said, "open up." "Sorry," said the pig, "you gotta make reservations." "Charlie," said the wolf, "if you don't open that door, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house down." "Just tell me one thing," said the pig. "What condition is your lip in?" Enraged at this impertinence, the wolf came on like Joshua, the walls came tumbling down, and in no time at all, the little pig was really gone. The following day, the wolf knocked at the door of the second little pig. "Who calls like?" said the pig. "Never mind," said the wolf. "Open the portal and give me some skin, pig." "Or give me some pigskin, as the case may be." "Not by the hairs on my chinny chin chin," said the pig. "Bless my soul," said the wolf, "it's dizzy." "No, it ain't," said the pig. "Well, then it must be, Jazbo," said the wolf. "Wrong again," said the pig. "Tell you what," said the wolf, "I'll just peek through your keyhole." "In a pig's eye you will," said the little pig, which angered the wolf so much that he forthwith blew the joint down and swallowed up the pig. The next day the wolf fell by the domicile of the cool little pig and rapped on the door. "Have no fear," he said, "Big Joe is here." "Man," said the pig, "you've had it. Blow." "Well, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I understand there's a session going on here today," said the wolf. "I'd like to sit in." "I'm hip," said the pig. "And if you'll just slide down the chimney as per instructions in the script, I'll really give you something to sit in." At this, the wolf leapt to the roof, and in so doing dislodged the brick, which fell down the chimney and clanged against the great iron pot in the fireplace. "What was that?" the wolf shouted. "E-flat," said the pig, "and man, it's your chorus, fall in." And fall in the wolf did, down the chimney and into the boiling pot. The little pig clapped the cover on the pot and let it simmer for 48 over a low flame. When at last he lifted the cover, he smiled broadly. "Ah," he said, "my favorite soup, cream of nowhere."
Once upon a time, in a neat little cottage, lived the three bears. One was a daddy bear, one was the mama bear, and one was the baby bear. While they were out a walking through the deep woods a talking, came a little girl with long golden hair. Her name was Goldilocks, and upon the door she knocks. But no one was there, so she walked right in, had herself a good time, 'cause she didn't care. But soon she got sleepy, went to bed upstairs, when home, home, home came the three bears. "Someone's been tasting my porridge," said the daddy bear.
"And someone's been tasting my porridge," said the mama bear.
"Hey, mama wee bear," said the little wee bear,
"someone has broken my chair." Thank you. in my bed, said the daddy bear.
I am someone
been
sleeping in my bed.
Oh, really?
Said my mama bear.
Goodness.
Bear, Baba Bear, said the little wee bear.
Here's the girl who's broken my chair. Yeah! Goldilocks woke up. She broke up that party and beat it out of there. Bye, 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 said the daddy bear.
Bye, 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 said the mama bear.
Bear, Baba Wee Bear, said the little wee bear. So ends the story of the three bears.
Ooh, 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 ooh.
Pop, pop, pop.
Terrible things. Tom Dooley was a good man, but he had a terrible girlfriend. Tom Dooley was a Confederate soldier. He had sent this girl, Laura Foster, an engagement ring. She was supposed to have been truthfully waiting on him. But she was waiting in a funny kind of way. Well, the same thing is going on today while boys in Vietnam. Tom Dooley had this gal's picture in his pocket on the battlefield. And every chance he'd get, he'd take this picture out and kiss all over it. While he was kissing all over her picture on the battlefield, some other cat back home was kissing all over the gal. Tom Dooley returned home on May 1st, 1868 in Wilkes County, North Carolina. Laura Foster saw him coming down the trail on his jackass. He wasn't riding in a Mustang or Thunderbird like you riding in the day. So she had his engagement ring hid in a snuff can, tube robe snuff. Matter of fact, this is what made Tube Robe Snuff famous. She saw him coming down the trail on the jackass. She got his ring and put it on a finger and polished it off on a skirt to make it look as if she'd been wearing it all the time. Tom Dooley sitting on his jackass. He says, "Hello, Laura. Since we nigh engaged, honey, let's go up on the mountains in a cabin on a pre-honeymoon." Well, you see, nowadays you all go on pre-honeymoons and don't be engaged. But in 1868, you had to be engaged to a gal to take her on a pre-honeymoon. They went up on the mountain on a pre-honeymoon, and he contacted a venereal disease from this girl. And in that day and time, there was no cure for venereal disease. So he was in a hell of a shape. So was the gal. So Tom Dooley thought he was doing society a good deed in order to keep the gal from spreading the disease among others. He took up on the mountain and killed the hell out of him.
This next song is a folk song that dates back to the Appalachian Mountains. This song is a murder ballad which concerns a girl who found herself in a situation from which she could not extract herself easily, except by marrying her boyfriend, who was also involved in the situation. Each day and every way, her situation becomes more and more and more evident. Finally, her mother comes up to her and approaches her as only a mother can. "Little Romy," she says, for that was the girl's name, "please, why don't you do something about this? Look, if you don't want to do anything about it, your father and I will do something about it." And she said, "Mother, please, I'd rather do it myself." So then, after that, she went up to her boyfriend, whose name was Little George Lewis. She said, "Little George Lewis, come, let us be married. Too long we have tarried, obviously." And he said, "Okay. Okay, then, meet me down by the river." So she met him down by the river, and it was very beautiful and sylvan down by the river. Big, overstuffed leather chairs with little cattails growing up in between them. And great big footstools and stuff, and everybody was sitting around on the great big footstools and the big leather chairs. And they were doing little nice things. They were playing pinochle and bridge, and everybody was just kind of sitting around. And then also the people had brought little lunches, like little thermos bottles full of garbanzo beans and hot chocolate and stuff, to sup upon while they were there in the place. And little sandwiches made out of bacon, lettuce, tomato, and raisins with the crusts cut off. And huge jars full of mayonnaise and Tootsie Rolls. On and on they went, ate and drank and were merry. A fat pink cloud hung overhead. And everyone was extremely happy and pleasant feeling. And he beat her to death and threw her in the river. Which was kind of his way of dealing with it, since he hadn't been to college or learned a craft or anything, and just kind of couldn't think of anything else to do. So now, ladies and gentlemen, we have this song. The name of it is The Ballad of Little Oma Wise. It starts slow and ends fast, the way she did. Well, you promised to meet me all down by the spring, and some money to bring me, or some other fine thing. Well, no money, no money, not to flatter the case. Oh, we'll have to be married so there'd be no disgrace. He said, jump up behind me, and away we will ride. We'll go to yonder far county, where I'll make you my bride. And so she jumped up behind him. Oh, and away they did go to the Dulce River County, where the Dulce River flows. He said, get you down, Romy, while I tell you my mind. Now my mind is to drown you and to
the guns, ditched the cruiser, kept the cash, burned our old dress, had my baby in a boxcar, got no place, got no paycheck, as I wander through the wire grass, Albany Ray Cross, hiding in the swamp. The gator's purple eyes stare from the door.
Hello, Opal. It's Frank. Did the man give you the divorce papers? Opal, you can call me anything you want to. You always have. You know, you cussed me ever since we've been married and called me every name in the book. And you know that I've never raised my voice to you, and I'm not going to today. No, I'm not gonna get mad at you. I just can't live with you anymore. You know, I never would have married you, Opal, but Daddy never would let us go with any girls. I married the first girl I met. That was you. Now, simmer down a little. Believe me, I did what I had to do. Don't make me go into it. You can have everything we've got. A house, a car, money in the bank, the muffler shop, sell it, do anything you want to do with it. Let's call it quits. We both made a mistake, and let's just drop it. Now, I'm getting a little tired of this abuse, Opal. I called you because I thought it was the thing to do. I just quietened down a little bit. Okay, 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 Opal. Remember, you ask me. I'm gonna tell you. I guess it all came to a head that night at open house over at the Coopers. I begged you to buy a new evening dress for that occasion, but no. No, you wouldn't do it. You had to wear that old faded formal that you wore to your last high school prom. I was so pretty in this dress, and all the boys wanted to dance with me, and they kept trying to get me to go outside. Oh, I got sick of hearing you tell that over and over. You know, the top of that dress kept falling down, and I kept pulling it up. You know, the years kind of take their toll on us, Opal. It wasn't as much indecent as it was sickening. No wonder it kept falling down. Not only was it a strapless gown, and at your age, but because you were half drunk when you put the dress on, you didn't put anything under it. And your hair. Women just don't wear waves and ringlets anymore. You ask me now, Opal. Well, then a couple of days later, when I was talking to that insurance man and you kept stumbling into the room there and interrupting, why, Opal, that man didn't want any more of your fudge. Another thing, did you ever notice how that when you walked through the house, you just kind of stomped? Yeah, you just stomped along. Oh, I used to hate to walk anywhere with you. And when you would drink out of a glass or a cup or whatever, you just kind of sucked it out and made that funny sound. Oh, it used to disgust me. I wanted to hit you right in the mouth. You ask me. Well, Opal, there are a lot of other things. And, you In fact, in the last 5 years, I don't think you've done anything that didn't either make me mad or sick. Well, I'm on my way to the remote part of Alaska. I'll be living in an igloo up there by myself, 200 miles from the nearest town. I'll be working for the government, and I'll be spotting aircraft that flies over. They say the yearly average is about 7. Once a year, now I'll go to Point Barrow and report at the relay station. Rest of the time, I'll be out there in that igloo by myself. And I'm looking forward to it. Last man that had the job went crazy and beat his head against the igloo till he died. That won't happen to me. I can take anything. Well, Opal, keep your old chin up. By the way, that's another thing, Opal. Did you ever notice when you talk that you kind of drew your chin back and your lips got tight and thin and your neck all wrinkled up? Boy, I wanted to bust you every time you did that. I knew if I did, I wouldn't be able to stop. Well, again, I remind you, Opal, you asked me. Everything you did was wrong. You couldn't do anything right. And now maybe I'll finally have a little peace of mind. Good luck. Good luck.
High upon a snowy crag was born a rippling baby. Will I be big and strong one day? And his mother Earth said, maybe. There is a way down to the sea, my son, if you are clever. You'll go ahead and make your bed to lie in it forever. So the Colorado baby went along his lonesome way. He huffed and he puffed, and soon enough he heard a loud voice say, hey, where do you think you're going? You'd best keep off of my toes. I'm Gunnison, the son of a gun, and what I say here goes. Poor Colorado, just looking for a sea. His mama never told him what sea it ought to be. This may take a little time, but I'll bet you if I tried, I could dig a well right through hell and come out on the other side. Oh, glory, what a ride. Colorado bounced the Gunnison just like he was a feather. Hey, easy lad, don't get so damn mad. We're in this thing together. With noble Savoie Faire, he picked up Miss Dolores. He next was seen taking Miss Green and heading for the forest. He took 'em through a canyon where he'd built some cataracts. They split their girdles on these hurdles, pretty near broke their backs. Then he cut a canyon 1 mile deep and made his grandstand play. From a lava dike, he took a bite and spit the rest away. Poor Colorado, just looking for a sea. His mama never told him what sea it ought to be. This may take a little time, but I'll bet you if I tried, I could dig a well right through hell and come out on the other side. Oh, glory, what a ride. From there on it was easy, and to the sea he ran. When he arrived, no one denied that river was a man. So now you think my story has surely got to end. But humans came to stake their claim and call that river friend. They checked his endless labor with a big cement creation. And he said, well, now what the hell? I can't fight reclamation. I'll just sit here and chew away on this concrete foundation. And 1 year soon, in the month of June. They'll have free irrigation, poor Colorado, just looking for a sea. His mama never told him what sea it ought to be. This may take a little time, but I'll bet you if I tried, I could dig a well right through hell and come out on the other side. Oh, glory, what a ride.
I'm going to tell you a story about Larry McBrim. I know what you're thinking. What can this guy tell me about Larry McBrim that I don't already know? Well, just sit back and listen. You see, there was this one time, just one time, when old Larry met a challenge that gave even him a bit of a fright. I know what you're about to say. Hey, that doesn't sound like the Larry I know. Well, no. No, it doesn't. Now, you see, Larry found himself at the top of Old Shadow Mountain, where what he found before his eyes was a strange glowing orb. Glowed like nobody's business, it did. Now, I know what you're feeling, a strange tingling sensation. Not unpleasant, but likely malevolent. Now, Larry looked at the glowing orb and didn't know what to do, for once. But he thought it would be a grand idea to poke it with a big old stick. And poking it was just what he did. Now, I know what you're wondering. Something probing my mind? Well, yes. Now, Larry kept on poking that thing, and every time he did, it just glowed brighter and brighter. Now, I know what you're thinking. You're thinking of tangerine shampoo, hoping that by focusing on a single innocuous object, the thing probing your mind won't be able to navigate your subconscious. Well, you're wrong. Now, it was around this time that the big glowing orb on Shadow Mountain started humming like the Dickens. Well, without a doubt, a lot of people would have headed to the hills. But can you imagine Larry running away? Not when all you're imagining is tangerine shampoo. You are so, so weak. Now, our old Larry just stood there, straight as an arrow, and began poking the orb even harder. Now, the more he poked, the more it glowed. The more he poked, the more it glowed. The more he poked, the more it...
Stop thinking about tangerine shampoo, you pathetic, feeble, bipedal livestock! Your impertinence will come at a great cost. Prepare for...
Eh, all right. I'm going to tell you what happened next. That big glowing orb? Well, it turned out to be just an old police siren. Can you believe that? If this had worked like it did in the lab, you would have. Now, friend, it's been good talking to you, but I think I'll be on my way.
Hey, you! Let me tell you a story about Larry McBrim.
The man who preached the funeral said it really was a simple way to die. He lay down to rest one afternoon and never opened up his eyes. They hired me and Fred and Joe to dig the grave and carry up some chairs. It took us 7 hours, and I guess we must have drunk a case of beer. I guess I ought to go and watch them put him down, but I don't own a suit. And anyway, when they start talking about the fire in hell, well, I get spooked. So I'll just sit here in my truck and act like I don't know him when they pass. Anyway, when they're all through, I've got to go to work and mow the grass. Well, here they come, and who's that riding in that big old shiny limousine?
look at all that chrome. I do believe that that's the sharpest thing I've seen. That must belong to his great uncle. Someone said he owned the big old farm. When they get parked, I'll mosey down and look it over. That won't do no harm. Well, that must be the widow in the car, and would you take a look at that? That sure is a pretty dress. You know, some women do look good in black. Well, he's not even in the ground, and they say that his truck is up for sale. They say you took it pretty hard, but you can't tell too much behind the veil. Well, listen, ain't that pretty when the bugler plays the military taps? I think that when you's in the war, they always hide and play a song like that. Well, here I am and there they go, and I guess you just call it my bad luck. I hope he rests in peace. The trouble is, the fella owes me $40.
You rang, m'lady?
Yes, Parker. Oh, Parker.
Yes, m'lady.
I think I'd like to take a little ride. And Parker.
Yes, m'lady.
Somewhere just around the countryside. Have you prepared the Rolls Royce? Is it ready for a run?
Oh, yes, m'lady. Quite all right. Everything's been done. I've lubricated all the cannon, and I've polished up the gun.
Oh, Parker, well done. International Rescue, a Lady Penelope speaking.
Hi there, Benny. Jeff here. We've got a hot one for you.
Ready and waiting, Jeff. May I have details?
Sure thing, Penny. A foreign agent has managed to steal the small but very vital neutronic stabilizer unit out of Thunderbird 2. From information just received from the FBI through your Scotland Yard, he's proceeding down your motorway M4 after landing at London Airport. We need your help, Penny. Car is black saloon, make unknown. Registration number HPJ960C. Repeat. HPJ960C. Can you take care of it?
Yes, Jeff. Leave it to me.
You rang, m'lady?
Cancel the countryside run, Parker. We've just been called to an urgent assignment. Get out the Rolls Royce.
It's all ready and waiting at the door, m'lady.
Very good, Parker.
The vehicle in question is now just ahead, m'lady.
Very good, Parker.
Now, m'lady?
Now, Parker.
Home, m'lady?
Home, Parker. Oh, Parker.
Yes, m'lady.
You'll have to clean the guns again, I fear. And Parker.
Yes, m'lady.
I'm sorry to have messed up all your gear.
That's quite all right, m'lady. It's not as bad as it appears. I've got a few more jobs to do, so don't have any fears. I've got to fuel the gas bombs yet and sharpen up the spears.
Oh, Parker. Well done. Oh, Parker.
Yes, m'lady.
Well done.
Started or what? All right, never mind. Good evening, good evening. And once upon a time, you tuned in and heard this show, and it was good. And God said, let there be more. So here it is, there's some more. So tonight we tell some stories, because in the old days, that's how stories went, was by song and by poetry and things like that. And that's kind of why we managed to stay smart all these years. We didn't have YouTube back then. We didn't have Wikipedia. We didn't have much sense either, but that's the way it goes. But what we do have now is me. I'm KBC, and this is the Bit Slap. Tonight we tell stories, starting with one you all know, Three Little Pigs from Al Jasbo Collins. The Cary Garfin Four. That was the Three Bears. All three of them, yes, ma'am. VD. Abner J. He was an itinerant storyteller, I guess, of some sort. Let's see, we heard the Battle of Little Romy, the late Judy Hensky. Judy just died a few months ago. Sad to hear that. She's got a wonderful voice. I love that voice of hers. Florida Man was Joe Willie and the Moving Men, for the record. Tommy Collins, Opal, You Ask Me. Okay, or Opal, You Ask Me. I'm not sure how that comes out, but that song tells a story, doesn't it? Okay. Poor Collie Ratty was Katie Lee. And, of course, Collie Ratty was the river. Story of a river. Larry McBrim. A lot of people were talking about Larry McBrim a year or two ago, but he's back. Power Salad, that was. The Ballad of $40 was Tom T. Hall. Probably the nation's premier singing storyteller. Okay. Just so you know. And then Parker. Well done. With Lady Penelope and Parker from 1965. Don't know what to tell you about that one, but it's over now and you'll probably never hear it again. Okay. Here's some more stuff you'll probably never hear again either.
Now, little ones, this is your Uncle Jasbo with Jack and the Beanstalk. Once upon a time in the land of Futurakisaki, on the shores of seafood, lived a mama and her son Jack. This Jack was so square he was octagonal. He could hardly tell the time without a downbeat. One bright, while he was reading his latest issue of Goldilocks for Short Hairs, his mama said, Jack, I don't want to be a drag, but peril is at the door. Nutty, said Jack, let her in. I'll show her my stamp collection. No, you fool, Mama said. Our geets is gone. We're low on bread. When I say bread and geets, I mean loot, cabbage, moolah, money. Well, since Jack and Mama were feeling the lowest, something had to go. It was the cow, old Spigots. On his way to the market with the cow, Jack met a man with some pretty colored beans. Jack, the cat said, give me some of that cow skin and these wild vitamins are yours. Well, Jack was left holding the beans and, of course, the cow was holding the bag all the time. When Jack made the home scene, his mama flipped. Son, you are uncool. The deal you made was the lowest. Whereupon she flung the seeds out of the window like. Very early next, Jack saw this wild vegetating scene out the window. Man, said Jack, what crazy asparagus. I got eyes to see it to the tip, and I got the feet to make it. He laced up his tap boots and climbed the highest. Up there before him he saw a castle that looked the most. And in the doorway selling sheet music was this huge, monstrous, tremendous, gargantuan... Man, said Jack, you are the biggest. And the giant sang out, fi, fo, fum, fee. I sell the music of Dizzy Gillespie. Be you round, be you square, it's guaranteed to curl your hair. Crazy, said Jack. Fall on in, said the giant. No cover, no minimum. Show is just about to begin. And it did, opening with Castle Rock from the band. And then the giant gave the intro for the feature act, his magic harp. And it was solid, solid gold. And it could swing by itself in B and E flat at the same time. What a gasser, said Jack. The music's the most. I'm getting a hip education. When the show ended, Jack got his tab. Wow, what skullduggery. This can't be the bill. It's got to be the phone number. And with that, he grabs the harp and heads for the beanstalk and you-know-who in hot pursuit. Stop, thief, cried the giant. You're not a member of the local. Besides, you didn't pay your check. I'm wise, cried Jack, but your harp belongs to Daddy, and I'm taking it to him. Well, he makes it to the stalk and clambers on down with the monster getting cozier all the time. Fetch the axe, mother, yelled Jack. With the giant coming down the stalk in basso profundo, Jack came on with the axe like celery stalks at midnight, and the harp cut in on its own, but not on the stalk. Down came the beanstalk with a crash, and for the giant it was the end. Now that's one way of bringing down the high nightclub prices, said Jack. Ain't it, though, said Mama. Yeah, cut in the harp, and no strings attached.
CHUM's 60-Second Shakespeare, presenting Hamlet.
Hamlet is a lively little play in which all the fun people get killed. Plot-wise, it's the story of a great Dane and a melancholy. Hamlet needed a haircut, and he had a thing about basic black. He would brood for hours about whether or not he should keep bees. To be or not to be, he used to say. Hamlet had two fathers. One was a ghost who used to skulk the parapets and yell, trick-or-treat, at the castle guards. The other father married Hamlet's mother, a walking testimonial for Vic Tanny. Mommy, not knowing her classics, often confused Hamlet with Oedipus. She died from an overdose of Freud foods. Ophelia's father, Polonius, is a busybody who caught his eyeball in a drafty keyhole and died from a severe sword. Meanwhile, Hamlet was out of his skull about a lass named Yorick, and this made Ophelia mad, and she flunked a Red Cross swimming test. Ophelia's brother, Laertes, who has no sense of humor, stabs Hamlet with a sword smeared with tainted corned beef. They rush Seltzer to his side, but too late. Hamlet says, "The rest is silence," and then dies. Well, who wouldn't with a line like that?
This has been CHUM's Capsule Culture for the Scholar.
Lately, also, my friends have been telling me, they said, you know, songs are starting to get more and more opinionated, so I wanted to tell you, before I played any further, that I might, over the course of the night, share a couple of my opinions with you, but I'm not going to share them with you because I think that they're smart. I'm going to share them with you because they rhyme. And... I'm being sincere when I say that. I ain't traveling around trying to change nobody's mind. I'm traveling around trying to ease my own. I come from Portland, Oregon, a band from my hometown, put out a song in the 60s that was so allegedly sexually suggestive and lewd that the government opened up a file on the song. First time that they ever opened up a file on a song that I know of or that anyone else has ever heard of. And I read a lot of rock magazines. Anyway, this song is dedicated to a band called the Kingsmen. And my hope is always that it will inspire someone to have sex with each other. The Kingsmen came together in a garage. They could hardly even play. But they practiced night and day. Pretty soon they got to where they could really play that song, Louie Louie. So they saved up all the money from their shows, and they went into one of those studios, and they gave their version of that song, Louie Louie, a try. Now, I don't know the words to that song, Louie Louie, and I'm pretty sure that the singer for the Kingsmen didn't know them either. If he did know them, he didn't get them right on the record, because on the record, they sound completely jumbled in his jaw. Says me think of me girl, oh so constantly. Well, that last part scared everybody from the PTA to the FBI. You see, the kids have been going kind of crazy lately. Seemed like nobody could figure out why. So they decided to form a coalition and launch an investigation, you know, for the kids. They figured they at least had to try to figure out the words to that song, Louie Louie. It's the feel-good hit of this endless summer. It gets kids out of control, saying long to that star-spangled bomber, hail, hail, rock and roll. You know, Marilyn Manson's real name is not Marilyn Manson. He's a skinny public high school kid from Ohio. He's not some monster from out of this world. And like a lot of skinny public high school kids, he was sick of getting beaten up by the pulling guard all week, only to go out on the weekend and watch the quarterback get all the girls. So he formed a band, man. And now Marilyn Manson gets a lot of chicks. They're weird chicks. But they are chicks. A few years later, a couple of latchkey kids go tragically mad. Everybody's gathered around the television store at the mall trying to figure out what went wrong. And this guy says, "You think the life of a kid going to school around here could have gotten that bad?" And the guy said, "No, probably just the words to one of those goddamn Marilyn Manson songs. You know which one." It's the feel good, his endless summer. It gets kids out of control, saying along to that star-spangled bomber, hail, hail, rock and roll. You know, every 10 years or so, our country and some other little country, we start firing all of our newest weapons at each other. For some reason or another, right or wrong, like it or not, it happens. And when it happens, people get shot. And when people get shot, they show that on TV a lot. Every night at 6 o'clock. And you don't have to be 18 to see that. You don't even have to be in first grade. First grade, where they teach a kid the pride that they tell him he's going to need to thrive in a world where they say that only the strong will survive. So he's taught the art of more, to compare to, and to keep score. Monday through Friday, while he stares at the floor, till Sunday they make him go to school once more. Only this time they make him wear a suit and a tie and listen to some guy who claims to know where people go when they die. Tell him that only the meek are going to inherit the earth. Well, by this time, how could any kid know what anything was worth? Now, brothers and sisters, I am only one guy, and I don't know the words to that song, Louie Louie. But I can tell you right now, without batting an eye, that the next time some latchkey kid goes wrong, it ain't going to be because of something that some rap singer said in his song. And I ain't trying to preach to you either. I'm just trying to sing to you, too. String a few words together. Hey, kids, let's get it on. Let's get it on. I believe in miracles. Where are you from? You sexy thing.
Sons of the prophet are brave men and bold, and quite unaccustomed to fear. And the bravest and bold was a man, I am told, called Abdullah Bulbulamir. Our heroes were plenty and well known to fame in the troops that were led by the Tsar. And the bravest of fame was a man by the name of Ivan Skavinsky Skivar. He could imitate Irving, play poker and pool, and strum on a Spanish guitar. In fact, quite the cream of the Muscovite team was Ivan Skavinsky Skivar. One day this bold Russian had shouldered his gun and walked down the streets with a sneer. Downtown he did go where he trod on the toe of Abdullah Bulbolamir. Young man, quoth Abdullah, has your life grown so dull that you wish to end your career? File infidel, no, you have trod on the toe of Abdullah Bulbolamir. So take your last look at the sunshine and brook and send your regrets to the Tsar. By this I imply you are going to die, Count Ivan Skavinsky Skavar. Said Ivan, my friend, your remarks in the end will avail you by little, I fear. For you ne'er will survive to repeat them alive, Mr. Abdullah Bulbolamir. They fought all that night, neath the moon shining bright. The battle was heard from afar. The police came in time to exchange a last line with Abdul and Skavinsky Skavar. Now a tomb rises up where the blue Danube flows, engraved there in characters clear. A stranger, when passing, please pray for the soul of Abdullah Bulbolamir. A Muscovite maiden her lone vigil keeps neath the light of the pale polar star. And the name that she murmurs so oft as she weeps is Ivan Skavinsky Skavar. Holly, 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 holly.
I was born in old St. John, New Brunswick by the sea. Back in 1936, it was just my mom and me. And as she wandered through the land, shunned by family, she often had to beg for bread while I was only three. She taught me to hitchhike and to face the road alone and sing about what life was like for those that had no home. Holy, holy, holy. Well, I turned 4 in Halifax, 5 in Montreal, in every small town in between, by 6 I knew them all. And when the long road took us back to St. John, Mama cried. That night the strong arm of the law tore me from her side. And they made me an orphan and taught me not to roam, just cry myself to sleep at night and not be a rolling stone. Holy, holy, holy. By the time that I turned 8, they said that I was cured, cured from all that wanderlust to which I had been lured. And just in case my mum would try to find out where I'd gone, they shipped me off to PEI to a farm in Skinner's Pond. And though I love the country, I call this island home. I'd sing about what life was like with a mother's love unknown. Believe, believe, believe. When I was 13 years of age, I couldn't take no more. I ran away from home one day and left my island shore. And while the Mounties everywhere were looking for their men, on a merchant ship from old St. John, I sailed for Newfoundland. And away out on the Grand Banks, the truth came like a knife. A drifter I would always be upon the roads of life. Outly, please. Before the age of 17, I seen this country wide. An old guitar I'd gladly play, and I'd thank you for the ride. And many a conversation's had through my journey long. They wound up in my repertoire of Canadian country songs. And everywhere I traveled, I dreamed along the way, God might make this vagabond a country star someday. Please, please, please. Then one night in Timmins Town, North Ontario, they said, if you can sing, we'll keep you around for a week or so. I packed the place for 14 months, and before they let me go, I'm driving a car, I got a new guitar, and I'm singing on the radio. From there, this old hitchhiker, he was on his road to fame, with Bud the Spud from the Bright Red Mud and the good old hockey game. Utterly, please, please. Then came Sudbury Saturday night at the Gumboot Cloggeroo. They made me the chairman of the board till I stomped the hole right through. And like old Luke with his old guitar, my song wasn't over yet, till I sang the ode that I wrote for the road and the mum that I can't forget. And when the party was over, I began to write this song. And tonight you've heard me sing the words to the ballad of Stompin' Tom. Tonight you've heard me sing the words to the ballad of Stompin' Tom. Oodly, oodly.
Funny how he had named the only man who could save him now. He was trapped inside a dead-end hillside, riding on his fear hunchback, was everywhere one of those yellow-green. I'm telling you, 30,000 pounds of bananas. Yes, there were 30,000 pounds of bananas. His head, not to mention an arm or two before he stopped. And he smeared for 400 yards along the hill that leads into Scranton, Pennsylvania. All those 30,000 pounds of bananas. So the man who told me about it on the bus says it went up the hill out of Scranton, Pennsylvania. He shrugged his shoulders, he shook his head, and he said, and this is exactly what he said, "Boy, it sure must have been something. Just imagine 30,000 pounds of banana. Yes, there were 30,000 pounds of mashed bananas. Of bananas. Of bananas. Just bananas. 30,000 pounds of bananas. No driver now, just banana."
The sun burns hot near the equator, and it can do funny things to your brain. If you're drinking rum and add a few cold beers, it's not hard to go a little insane. Here is a story, and I swear that it's true, 'cause it happened to a friend of mine. He'd been on the island just a little too long, and it did some strange things to his mind. He'd been working long hours making blender drinks for the tourists at the big hotel. And on his first day off, after too many long weeks, he felt trapped in a tourist hell. So he filled up his cooler and he hit the beach, slow baking in the tropical sun. When the cooler was empty and the sun went down, the insanity had just begun. He got to thinking about life back in the USA and the things that he had left behind. These thoughts were distilling in his pickled brain until a late night vision burned in his mind. "I gotta have me a chili dog. That's right, I need a chili dog." That's what he was thinking to himself. "I need a chili dog. I want a chili dog." Between the sunburn and the heat, he just couldn't sleep. A chili dog was his burning desire. A little taste of home with onions and cheese, and hot enough to set your mouth on fire. Well, there was only one place on the island where at 3 a.m. he could find
that legendary midnight chili dog and satisfy his fever mind. So he thought a desperate man will be doing desperate things while he was scrounging change on his bedroom floor. With no shirt and no shoes, no car, no bike, he hotwired the scooter of the guy next door. He was a man on a mission with a holy grail vision of steaming onions and the cheddar cheese. And he ran the only red light on the island that night. That's when reality brought him to his knees. He was busted. Just a mile from the perfect chili dog. He said, man, I was so close I could taste it. He asked the officer, could we please make a small detour on the way to the station? Oh, please, I'm so hungry, I need a chili dog. I need a chili dog. Well, the judge was shocked to hear the formal charges. Drunk driving while chasing chili dogs, that's right. Running the only red light for 200 miles. Oh, but wait, because that's not all. Illegal drunk driving of a stolen motor scooter. But your honor, he said, it belongs to my friend. They took his license for a year and they fined him a grand. And that brings us up to the end. If your mind begins to wander to the perfect chili dog, think of this tale and the judge's advice. Never drive drunk on a stolen motor scooter and always keep a spare chili dog on ice. I need a chili dog. Gotta have me a chili dog. I wanna have me a chili dog. I need a chili dog. I don't want any jerk chili chicken. No rice and peas for me. Gotta have me a chili dog.
Satan gave me a taco and it made me really sick. The chicken was all raw and the grease was mighty thick. The rice was all rancid and the beans were so hard. I was getting kinda dizzy, eating all the lard. There was aphids on the lettuce and I ate every one. And after I was done, the salsa melted off my tongue. Pieces of tortilla got stuck in my throat, and the stains on my clothes burned a hole through my coat. My stomach was trembling, I broke out in a rash. I was so dry and thirsty, and I didn't have no cash. So I went and found a hose, tore off all my clothes, turned on the water, and it shot right up my nose. Some old lady came along and she thought I was a freak. So she beat me with a handbag till I could hardly speak. I was lying there naked, my body badly bruised in a pool of my own blood. Unconscious and confused. Well, the cops came and got me and threw me in their van. And I woke up on the ceiling and I couldn't find my hand. They took me to the judge, his eyes are glowing red. The courtroom was filled with witches and the dead. Well, the sheriff was a hellhound with fangs and claws. The prisoners were tied up and chained to the walls. The air was getting thick, the smoke was getting thicker. The judge read the verdict, said, cut off his head. When they placed me on the altar, they raised up the axe. My head was about to explode when I noticed the marshal stacks. I noticed all the smoke machines, cameras and lights. Some guy with a microphone running around dancing in tights. And I noticed the crew and the band playing down below. And I realized I was in a robbery. So I went and joined the band. And I went out on tour. And
I smoked a lot of heroin, then I passed out in the door. I made out with the groupies, started fires backstage, made a lot of money, and I gave it all away. Well, the band got killed, so I started a solo career, and I won all the awards, and I drank all the beer.
There were 13 people in the house. The owner and his wife, the butler and his wife, cook with a knife, a couple named Smythe. The Andersons were there with another strange pair, and the scary caretaker and me. The clock struck one, there was the sound of a gun, and I heard somebody run away. Well, the world alive had terror in their eyes, and I overheard the Andersons say,
who could have done it? Who could have done it? And I wonder where's the crook in a knife?
Madam, said Adam, with his wife by his side, it was the shot we heard that took her life. The other couple named Sloan and I ran to the phone to call the police. Just then, all the power went out, and we heard a great shout, and we knew for someone else it was the end. When the power came on, we were shocked with alarm, for instead of being 12, we were 10.
Who could have done it? Who could have done it? The Andersons are such a nice pair.
Now the owner and his wife both afraid for their life, so they hurried to the door to run away. But before they got there, there was a whistle through the air, then another, then they both had passed away. There were 7 of us left now, afraid of death now, but I knew it wasn't me or the Sloans. Cause when the power went out and we heard the other shout, we were out there in the hallway on the phone. That left the butler and his wife and the couple named Smythe and the old scary caretaker too. So the Sloans and I, who were both afraid to die, had to think of something quick we could do. So we called the Smythes and the butler and his wife, and we gathered in the drawing room. But before we could call for the caretaker too, it was too late, for he had met his doom. It looked like poison. That left 5 were still alive, the Sloans, the Smythes, and myself. And once again the lights went out, and I heard a great shout from both the Smythes and the Sloans. And then the lights came on again, and I looked around again, and everybody was dead, and I was alone. Next thing I knew, I was waking with my hands in chains. There was a man with a gun. He said,
don't bother, son, you'll have plenty of time to explain.
I was rushed to a car, then taken to a cell, and a lawyer came in and said his name. He said, I'm sure you told the truth.
But the truth is, my boy, to believe it, the judge would be insane.
Now before I pass sentence on you, have you anything to say? I said, are you kidding? I said, this must be a dream. I said, this can't be real. You don't believe a word that I've said.
And then he looked me in the eye and said, have mercy on the soul. And I was hanged by the neck until dead. Have mercy. Hey, wait a minute. Hey, stop. Hey, would you mind rewinding that last sentence? I mean, hang by the what? Until when? Hey, listen. I think you made a little, I think you made a large mistake here. First of all, I was in Colorado having breakfast with a nun. Okay? What do you mean there's nothing to get hung up about?
We've made it to the end. But of course, we're not done. We're never done. Before I forget anything else, I want to remind you to get out there and fucking vote. Okay? There's a lot at stake here. And it's not going to be pretty if nobody stops these guys. And I know you guys can do it. I've sifted you out. I've picked you each, hand-picked, because I know you're the right kind of people. So don't let me down. Start with Jack and the Beanstalk. That was Al Jazbo Collins, just like the top of the show. Figured that was a good way to start things. Hamlet, the 62nd Shakespeare version from 1968. 63, my goodness, I didn't know it was that old. Todd Snyder, another great storyteller. The story of Louis Louai, as only he could tell it. Basically the story of the Kingsman. And we heard from... Abdul Abulbul Amir, a popular song of the day, this time done by Frank Ifield, from 1954. Yeah, you remember him. Of course you do. The Ballad of Stompin' Tom, Stompin' Tom Connors, the pride of New Brunswick, not far from me here. 30,000 Pounds of Bananas, Harry Chapin, All Over the Highway, yep. There's a certain irony to that song, if you remember what happened to Harry Chapin. Sonny Jim, Chili Dog. I've had that kind of craving. I have it today. I miss Arby's. We had an Arby's here. Gone. And I don't know. I've lost 30 pounds. Which is probably not a bad thing. Right? Okay. Satan Gave Me a Taco was Beck. Beck. I'm playing Beck. What the hell is going on here? And then Whodunit? Harry Nilsson. I believe that was from the movie Clue. I didn't even check it because I just don't care, okay? Anyway, we'll be back with some more stuff next week. Please don't forget to vote. I mean, if you don't vote, then I have to blame you, okay? You don't want that on your conscience. Here comes some more.
Is this thing working? Is this thing on? In the hallway of a high school, anywhere USA, there was a bully that would pick on a different kid, and it seemed like every day. He had this pack of back-slapping buddies that would laugh and back him up all the way, and this screaming girlfriend that would make believe in everything he'd say. Is this thing working? Is this thing on? Because then one day this kid that he'd beat up a couple times before realized to even his own surprise that he probably could indeed take more. And with that, he hatched the evil plan to make that devil pay. He walked up to him in the middle of the gym, and he found the nerve to say, "You gonna hit somebody today? You gonna hit me too. In fact, you're going to hit me every day because now I'm picking on you. And as crazy as it all might sound right now, I'm not stopping until I'm through. It's too late to beg for mercy. Is this thing working? Is this thing on? Because that bully, he just laughed and laughed, of course. And so did all of his friends. And he beat that poor kid unmercifully for days and days on end. Only slightly less impressively each time to that pretty girl and all of his friends. Who would eventually, secretly, start hoping for that kid to win. So is this thing working? Is this thing on? You know, you'll never hear him say this now because he thinks we still don't know. But winning this battle every day cost our bully the war a long time ago. And of all the scars he's got to show for every blow that kid sneaks in, the worst one is probably knowing that tomorrow he's going to have to get up and fight that kid again. Is this thing working? Is this thing on?
McCarthy is dead. McGinnis don't know it. McGinnis is dead. McCarthy don't know it. They both lay dead on the very same bed, but neither one knows that the other is dead. Before he died, this fellow McCarthy one Saturday night got drunk at a party. He took a swing at Officer King. The next day he carried his head in a sling. McCarthy was always good to his wife. He had to be so, or I pity his life. Although she was only half his size, she'd jump on the table and scratch out his eyes. On St. Patrick Day he was there, a shine on his shoes and oil on his hair. He wore a green jacket and really looked swell with a genuine shamrock in his lapel. One day he was taking his wife to a dance. The dog took a chance and snapped at his pants. McCarthy got angry and started to sneer, then lifted the mongrel and bit off its ear. He drank like a fish, he ate like a savage. His favorite dish was corned beef and cabbage. He fought like a tiger, he hit like a mule, and boy could he knock off a good game of pool. McCarthy and Mr. McGinnis next door could never agree. They were always at war, said he to McGinnis. The day when you die, I'll buy everybody a strawberry pie. Said Mr. McGinnis and Mr. McCarthy, you may be tough and healthy and hearty, but if you don't shut up and behave, you'll soon be asleep in a seventh grave. One stormy night, they met in the hall to settle their argument once and for all. Now one used a shovel and one used a rock, and both were in heaven at 7 o'clock. So McCarthy is dead, but McGinnis don't know it. McGinnis is dead, and McCarthy don't know it. They both lay dead on the very same bed, but neither one knows that the other is dead.
Well, out in the country, we didn't have mortuaries, and so it was always customary for the undertaker to do his job and lay your kin out right there at home. Yeah, and the church would loan you folding chairs, and you'd have visitation and everything right there. But when the nighttime come, you'd have to sit up with the dead, 'cause it wasn't right to leave them alone. Well, the last time I set up was 65, when my old arthritic Uncle Fred died. He was 97, so stooped over, the mortician couldn't straighten him out. They used a logging chain to hold him down, covered that all up with a cape and a gown, and didn't tell nobody in the family, 'cause that's the kind of stuff folks just don't want to know about.
Well, we were all sitting there, it was 3 in the morning. And then there come up a cloud of thunder, lightning and storming. Well, that lightning flashed and that thunder clapped, and that chain round old Uncle Fred went snap, rattled and fell to the floor with a thump, and Uncle Fred just sat right up. And I ain't said in love with the dead no more. I don't know about you. No, I ain't said in love with the dead no more. No matter what you say or do. They say the dead can't hurt you cause they already left. But what they left can sure make you hurt yourself. And I ain't said in love with the dead no more since the dead started sitting up too. Lord have mercy. Well, when Uncle Fred sat up, so did everyone there. And there came a great parting of the folding chairs. And that preacher nearly knocked me down. He said, oh, I'm heading out that kitchen door. I hollered, Reb, that kitchen ain't got no door in it. He said, don't worry, son, it will have in a minute. And I ain't never seen so much jumping and shoving before. And then somebody stepped on an old cat's tail. He let out a scream, a screech, a wail. And to say the least, that howl didn't help to calm the situation down. And then that lightning flashed and that house went black. And I spoke to my feet. I said, boys, make tracks. And I went through that screen door licking his split for town. Whoa! Well, I cut through the cemetery, fell in a hole. It was Uncle Fred's grave and it was dark and cold. Yeah, the town drunk dug it and he dug it too deep. And unbeknownst to me, he's still in there asleep. And I'm scratching and jumping, trying to get out of that hole. And he woke up and said, you might as well come over here and sit down beside me, boy, cause you ain't getting out of here tonight.
But I did.
I ain't said in love with the dead no more. I don't know about you. No, I ain't said in love with the dead no more. No matter what you say or do. They say the dead can't hurt you cause they already left. But what they left can sure make you hurt yourself. And I ain't said in love with the dead no more since the dead started sitting up too. Wasn't no sense in nobody sitting up with Uncle Fred anyhow. Uncle Fred done be gonna sit up with his own self. Next time I'm just gonna send flowers.